Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show, monthly market update episode for this current month of June 2017. Here again with our resident expert, economist, and wealth advisor, Paul Sloat, founder of Green Shake Advisors based in Wayne, Pennsylvania. If this is your first time joining us here on the REI Diamond Show, or if you are one of our returning loyal listeners, welcome to the show. Every week, I invite a real estate expert from somewhere in the U.S. to share their wisdom as it relates to real estate investing. If you're interested in checking out our catalog of shows or interested in receiving an email when the weekly episode is released, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com. You'll even get a free download of my book on wholesaling, Become a Wholesale Real Estate Master. In addition to our weekly expert guest format, once per month, Paul Sloat joins us here on the show and fills us in at the economic forces at work in the national and global economy and what those forces are expected to do to the local real estate investment markets in the short and long term. This month, Paul presents some compelling insights as to why there is not much reason to believe that we are facing another real estate crash like we saw in 2008, 2009. I often hear people say that they're getting ready for the next crash and that's the reason they're not buying anything. Depending on their market, they might be right. However, based on the economic data, most residential real estate will continue to hold its value, if not increase in value, over the next 5 years or more. Let's hear it from Paul. Welcome back to the show, Paul.
Well, thank you for having me back, Dan.
Absolutely. So how are things going here in your world, Paul?
Things are going well in our world. We're busy. We're picking up many new clients, you know, so the business is expanding at a rapid rate, which is always a good thing.
Do you think that your expansion, like we're experiencing in the real estate world, pretty favorable conditions in the current right now, in the immediate, you know, June 16, 2017, do you think your business picking up also goes in line with, you know, the favorable economic conditions that we've had here recently? Or do you think, you know, that doesn't have much of a bearing? Just curious about how the financial services industry works.
It depends on which portion of the financial services industry. So, for example, loan demand is highly cyclical to the economy. But what we do is a lot less cyclical. Our revenues are cyclical to the economy, but the growth of the business and the number of clients is not.
So cool. Why don't we dive right into perhaps some of what we might see coming down the pike here in the near future, maybe the long-term future from an economic standpoint. Sound good, Paul?
That sounds good.
Take it away.
All right. Just as a reminder, today is June 16th, 2017. So data may come up that might be important on anything we talk about. So maybe we'll talk about some data that came out today. That's the new privately owned housing units in permit issuing places by the U.S. government. The Census Bureau issues these numbers. And what we are continuing to see on a year-over-year basis is that single-family home permits continue to grow year over year, while actually multifamily units, especially for those five units or more, which include all the large buildings, actually shrank year over year and is down around, that number is down around 13% year over year compared to single family permits up 6% year over year. And as you know, we've been talking over the last couple of years about this looming shift from multifamily demand to single family owned housing. So as the millennials age into their prime home buying years, the statistics are actually validating that they look exactly like every other generation. And what does that say? They're beginning to buy homes, especially starter homes, and that will continue for the next 5 years. at which point not only will they be buying starter homes, but they'll also start to buy move-up residences. So as the millennials continue to age and impact the U.S. economy, we expect similar impacts to what occurred when the baby boomers aged and moved into owning their own single-family houses. And the other thing that happens when you buy a house is that you need to buy all this stuff you don't own. So typically when you move from a rental apartment to a house, there's a tremendous amount of other things that are bought with a 12 to 24 month lag after the initial home purchase, which means it should be additive to economic growth over time. The other thing we'll point out is that a unit of single family housing adds twice as much to economic growth as a unit of multifamily housing. So even though overall housing starts may not have risen year over year because of the decline in the multifamily area, the single family area's impact on the economy more than offsets the decline in the multifamily area. So this is something we should keep in mind, that single family housing is very important to the economy. The other thing that we can point out about single family housing is that equity in their homes as a percent of the home's value is now back to the levels last seen in the early 2000s. This means that the consumer is in good shape, housing's in good shape. There's only a few million units now that are underwater. In other words, the value of the mortgage is in excess of the value of the unit. So units are starting to move, and we can see this in the number of transactions of housing that are occurring in the economy, which continues to pick up, which should be positive for economic growth. And in addition, since that has normalized, homeowners once again will be in a position to borrow against their houses, and we'll probably see over the next 12 to 24 months at some point second loans on homes increase or refi with takeouts of equity start to increase. And that is important because that will add to economic growth sometime over the next couple of years. So what we have going for single family housing right now is demographics, and we have the fix of the balance sheet of individual America or family America. So now that that's fixed, that can all add to economic growth. Lastly, I would be remiss in not talking about the Fed. The Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. However, this is having little impact on the long-term rate, because the belief is they're raising interest rates enough to slow the economy. So therefore, long rates have actually come down a little bit. So mortgage rates remain highly supportive of single-family housing. Now, we expect those who are involved in flipping single-family homes to be able to do so profitably for at least the next several years. We know that margins have tightened up in that business, and where people used to be able to make, let's say, $50,000-$60,000 on a home, they can only make $30,000 or $40,000 on a home. However, they can still make $30,000 or $40,000 on a home if done properly. So we don't see the Fed having a near-term effect on the affordability of buying a home, except in the case where they would tighten too much, which we think is a 2018 occurrence, at which point we could have a slowdown or a modest recession. And the reason we say modest recession is because there are really no excesses in the economy, except we're building a few extra units of multifamily apartments. The other area where we've seen a little bit of overbuilding in real estate is in the self-storage area. And in fact, rental rates in the self-storage area are flat year over year. In other words, rents have gone up 0%. Now, we all know that costs are rising around the board, so this is not good for self-storage properties. So, in general, we see the economic environment is relatively benign. We probably have a recession in late 2018 or in 2019, which will slow the housing market but not roll it over because we're still building too few units. We need to build approximately, as I've said before, 1.5 million units, and we are building today less than 1.2 million units, so we're 300,000 units short. I would compare this to what went on in 05 and 06 and 07, where we were building almost 2 million or more than 2 million units. And we had demand of 1.5 million for new units. So therefore, we were oversupplying the marketplace. Today, we continue to undersupply the marketplace. And despite rates for individual pieces of real estate having gone to record levels in places like San Francisco or New York City, what we are seeing is that housing prices across the U.S., according to the latest data from Case-Shiller, are up around 6% and continue to rise at around 6%. We think this is no surprise, given that we still are not supplying enough units into the marketplace, especially with the millennials beginning to move into their prime home buying ages. So housing should have a pretty good environment, barring some out of left field thing that occurs like when we had 9/11 years ago. So we're quite positive on housing into the early 2020s. We see the beginnings of a ramp up in unit output of new housing coming from some of the public home builders. So for example, D.H. Horton, which is one of the largest home builders in the country, they announced an acquisition of a company that basically permits land, and they bought them. They have not bought them, but they announced they are buying them in order to ramp up their output of homes. However, this will take a few years before the impact can be seen in the marketplace. So we're really talking somewhere in the 2020 area before we really start to see an impact, and then in 2021 and 2022, it will accelerate. Until then, and based on what we've seen from some of the other home builders like Toll, incremental units will remain in check because they all have a memory of the last recession from 2008 to 2009. So given this, the supply-demand balance should still remain favorable for individual single-family housing until 2021 or 2022. And that's what we think on the housing market, and the data continue to validate that. In some of the other classes of real estate, we are a little less positive. As we've said, we're spending too much on multifamily. And we've already seen landlords offering rebates of 3 months of free rent if you want to sign a new lease or if they want to keep you in your building. So certain landlords are preemptively trying to keep their tenant base, and we think this will spread as more properties come online in the next year, and then especially if we have a recession in 2019 and occupancies actually drop, which is likely what would happen in a normal recession, coupled with the millennials moving into houses from rental properties. As a reminder, multifamily from 2009 to about 2015 benefited from what we call a perfect set of conditions. We had put a number of renters into owning homes that should never have been allowed to buy homes, so they had to come back into renting. Then we had the millennials moving into the workforce, and they were renting apartments so that they could be near their workplace. And then thirdly, because we had gone through a difficult recession in which we blew up the financial system, so the banks were not lending, it restrained for some time the ability of builders to build new multifamily units. So those three things combined for effectively a shortage of units, and we saw rental rates rise significantly at the same time as occupancies went up. And in fact, rental rates went from the bottom of their ratio to incomes to the top end of the ratio to incomes that we have seen historically over long periods of time. Speaking of occupancy, we are seeing occupancy flatten out in the multifamily area, and we've seen all the revenue growth is due to raising rental rates. So rental rates are still going up maybe a couple of percent in places like New York City. However, occupancy has flattened out, and we expect it to take a tick down next year in 2018, even without a recession. If we take a look at some other classes of real estate, such as self-storage, we have building way too much square footage for the marketplace to absorb. There is zero rental growth in self-storage right now, and we think this is going to pressure margins and returns on self-storage properties. One thing we would note, in a recession, cap rates will likely go up. So you'll get some multiple compression on top of seeing your NOI be under pressure due to poor performance of the properties, given the massive amount of space under construction and coming online over the next 12 to 24 months. And if we were to look at other classes of real estate, such as hotels, we're starting to see similar things. So in the hotel area, we went through a period after the last recession where the amount of incremental space did not grow for several years. So in 2009, we had the tail end of the hotels that were approved. It takes about 3 years to get a hotel up and running from when we break ground. So supply grew 2.8% in 2009, then grew only 1.7% in 2010, with most of that capacity coming on in the first half. Then capacity growth collapsed for the next few years, down as low as 0.4%, up to a high of 0.7%. This is at the same time as demand was exploding as the economy recovered. Now what we have going on is starting in 2015, the amount of space under construction and actually delivered accelerated. So we had 1.1% of incremental space delivered in 2015 and 1.9% in 2016. As a result, in 2017, what we are seeing is for the first half of the year, occupancies are actually slightly down year over year, and we have seen that room rates are up on average about 2%, leading to about 1.8 to 2% RevPAR growth, that's revenue per available room growth, almost completely due to the rise in room rates. It depends on the market, but that is the trend. And there is a lot of capacity coming as we will increase capacity 2.1% this year and 2.5% in 2018 and 2019. We expect this ramp up in capacity to put pressure on occupancies and ultimately put pressure on room rates, even without a recession, because we are now growing the available number of rooms faster than the demand for those rooms. So as we look forward, we expect the hotel industry to come under pressure, and we expect ultimately banks to start tightening loans in the hotel area as it becomes apparent we have oversupply. So what we are looking at is in various classes of real estate, we are beginning to see the end to the cycle as we now have too much supply coming online in multifamily. We have too much supply coming online in self-storage. We have too much supply coming on in hotels. And we have too much supply because the demand for mall space is declining. So when we look at that, we think that for the people in the commercial construction area, there will be an issue because private non-residential construction is going to come under pressure over the next couple of years as existing properties finish building out and the demand for building new properties begins to roll over. I know we have not talked much about the building cycle, but for a portion of the listener base, this is important. And what we would say is that we would expect a peak in the private non-residential side of the business sometime in late 2018 or by the middle of 2019 as a number of these areas roll over. And if we were to have a recession, it would roll over even more in 2019 and then 2020. So if you're a commercial builder, you should be aware of that and keep that in mind. The other piece we will talk about here is when we look at what would happen to spreads in a recession. In a recession, spreads are likely to blow out, probably blow out more than they should because people remember the last recession, and the way people react is always dependent on what happened the last time. So if we were to look at what happened the last time, we had a disaster. We do not expect a disaster. In fact, what we expect is a small, shallow dip in the economy. But you will see spreads in the loan market blow out. And so, for example, if private hard money lending is available at 10% today for a home, that might become 12 or 14%. In a recession, depending on where you are and depending on the availability of capital. So that's one thing that we would expect, and your listener base should be aware that the cost of borrowing against the houses that they are planning to fix up and flip is going to go up likely significantly at some point in the next couple of years when we have a recession. The other thing we would point out is that the move to the internet continues and internet sales in the retail area continue to grow at 12 to 15% year over year. And we expect that to continue for the foreseeable future. So things like warehouses should continue to do well as the internet continues to grow as a piece of the overall pie. And I think that's about it. The only area which has to cycle up is public construction, as we've said before, and public construction would need the Houses of Congress to get their act together, which likely won't occur except before an election where there's pressure from the electorate and they have to go up in front of the voters, or before a presidential election where they want to get something done so they don't get thrown out of office. So we think there's going to be nothing on the infrastructure side out of Congress anytime soon, and we will only see something if Congress comes under pressure due to political pressure from the electorate right before a vote to keep them or throw them out of office. And that's it for this month. Dan, any questions?
Cool. I have two written down, Paul, just kind of want to touch on. The first would be, you said that the occupancy was slightly down in the hotel sector. Would that be caused by the new supply, you know, creating a new calculation and then the occupancy rate going down? Or is that because companies and people are reducing their travel?
It is due to the new supply. Travel's actually up year over year.
Okay, good. So that's the good sign. It's not like we're seeing companies and people start to pull back yet. Like,
no, if we had seen a real pullback, we'd already see pressure on rates. The area where we have seen a pullback in future hotel demand, which was mentioned by Marriott Corp in a recent public appearance, has been in the corporate side for future group travel. So for 2018, maybe 2019, where this is where conferences and all are booked well in advance. And Marriott did mention it had seen a slowdown in that area. But in the short term, we are seeing no slowdown. Remember, a lot of corporate business, besides the transient travel, is booked well in advance.
Yeah, and for anybody listening that might not know why I wanted to know the answer to that question, I mean, that would be an indication of some trouble on the horizon, which if we do have a pullback in the future group travel, meaning businesses are starting to book a little less, it could be an indication that the expectations of the business in 2018 and 2019 are maybe not as good as today. Right, Paul?
That's correct.
And the other one I had for you was the housing starts are relatively at a break-even point. So it's not like we have – what is the housing start number right now? Is that still at 1.2 million units per year?
Yeah, it's around 1.2 million. And what you've got is, if I remember correctly, is the multifamily starts year-over permits and starts have dropped from like 420,000 to like 360,000 for the permits, I'm pretty sure. I'd have to look up the data, and that's been offset by a rise in single family.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing because we've talked about that. You have mentioned that on several of our episodes over the last year or so, or even more than that since we started doing these monthly market updates, was exactly that. That was the trend that was going to start taking place, and the millennials would start buying houses. And, you know, the contrarian viewpoint that some of the people had or some of the viewpoints out floating around were that, oh, no, the millennials are just going to rent properties forever. They're not going to start buying houses. They don't want to own things. And there's, which is kind of starting to seem like nonsense based on what's actually happening in the market, what's actually going on with the numbers, the increase in the single family residential housing starts beginning to offset the multifamily residential. And I think that overall news is really great news for us in the real estate industry to know that, you know, the millennials are actually behaving in line with what we expect them to, you know, from a 30,000 foot viewpoint of them and their demographics and their age. And it's not something that's out of left field that they're completely going against the grain and completely changing the course of humanity. Right, Paul?
Correct. You know, at the end of the day, if you get married and have kids, and I live here in Philadelphia, it's unlikely you are going to send your kids to the Philadelphia public schools if you have sufficient income that you can have a choice. And I can tell you that we are seeing in neighborhoods where I live, lots of young couples with kids ready to enter the public schools, having finished, let's say, nursery school, which is not paid for, and where you have to pay anyway, moving into the neighborhoods in our community. So our belief is that the millennials, and the statistics bear this out, are just like any other generation, just delayed a year or two.
That was all I had, Paul, but I did want to thank you, and I kind of want to point out for anybody that's listening for the first time or who has been tuning in to our show here for a long time, whether with Paul or any one of the expert guests that we have, I have noticed a tremendous increase in my own perspective on how I buy property, whether that's property to buy, fix, resell, you know, in different markets. I'm in Atlanta, in Baltimore, D.C., Chicago. I'm in Florida. I'm also in Philadelphia area. And as a result of, you know, our discussions right here, Paul, and a lot of the information that you brought to my attention, which I previously did not seek out, and, you know, I don't continuously go digging into the same level of statistics and things that are important and that you bring on the show, and it helped to kind of change my perspective and my investment philosophy in the real estate world. And I just wanted to kind of thank you for myself and on behalf of the listeners who are also, I'm sure, getting a ton of value as they think about their own real estate investments and other investments in different ways as a result of doing these episodes. So we really appreciate you coming on the show. Appreciate all the unique perspectives and the unique information you bring to our attention. I just want to sincerely thank you for coming on the show, Paul.
Oh, well, Dan, it's my pleasure. I'm glad to help people. Most of what I talk about, believe it or not, is public information. It's just nobody out there organizes it in a way that it would be useful to people. So we try to do that and help out to all your listeners and our clients with their businesses, and that's what we try to do.
Paul, do you want to share some information about your company? So if anyone listening would love to get in contact with you and maybe explore a conversation or relationship with you a little further, that they can get in touch with you?
Sure, Dan. Thank you very much. They can go to our website, www.greendrakeadvisors.com. And if they want to get in touch with us, they can fill out the contact us form, or they can give us a ring at our main number at 610-687-7766. And thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Paul, for coming on the show. We'll catch you next time.
Catch you next month.
Thank you for listening to this monthly market update episode of the REI Diamond Show. Are you interested in receiving an email notification the next time an REI Diamond Show episode is released? You can sign up at www.reidiamonds.com or subscribe through one of the podcast apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. If you have deals for sale, go to www.reidiamonds.com and send them over. I am currently buying property in Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, Chicago, Atlanta, and the Tampa Bay region in Florida. You can also find deals I have for sale along with our full catalog of REI Diamonds episodes. Basically, tons of cash generating opportunity can be found at that site. Thanks again for being a loyal listener of the show. Dan Breslin here. I'll catch you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.